Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing today?
Good. Very well. How are you doing?
All right, all things considered.
Oh, yeah. What are you considering?
Well, I'm kind of marking a special day today. Today would have been my dad's 100th birthday.
Wow. So,
he was born on March 30th, 1924, 100 years ago today. So I spent some of the day reflecting on the time that I knew him, which wasn't the beginning of those years. And of course, he's been gone since 07, but a wonderful man. He was a devout hockey fan his entire life, Toronto Maple Leafs fan, but given the era that he grew up in, he did his RCF training in Toronto, so he went to some Toronto Maple Leafs games while he was there.
And that was a good time to be a Leafs fan, I'm guessing.
Yes.
Your father's in the era, 40s. Right?
In the 40s,
then again in the 60s,
and then
right?
Again in the 60s, which was the beginning of my era. I saw the last three Toronto Cups. And I was a Leaf fan myself way back before the Oilers.
Father like son.
Father like sons. All three of my my two brothers and I were all like that.
My son Joe was just inducted into the Canadian Air Force. He just finished his basic officer's training. He's now a second lieutenant. Awesome. Going to be stationed in Cold Lake, Alberta.
Awesome.
So all you people in Cold Lake, don't hold it against Joe that he's my son. And all right. Bruce, 6-0 win for the Oilers today over the Anaheim Ducks. It was a kind of a laugher of a game, kind of a nothing game. Turned out exactly as one would hope, though. Grade A shots were 17-11 with a subset of five alarm shots, 6-4. Many of the Oilers' goals were kind of gimme goals. They had some really great chances. And not so much for Anaheim. The Anaheim Ducks strongly remind me of the Decade of Darkness Edmonton Oilers. Strongly. Mm-hmm. And we'll see if it turns out, if this group actually pans out for the Anaheim Ducks. I know when you look at their draft chart, Bruce, they've traded away a lot of their recent, like they have the most recent first round draft picks like Leo Carlson and Mason McTavish and Trevor Zegras. But if you go just one step back from that, they've traded away a slew of them. Like players like Max Comtois didn't work out, and they've just traded away Jamie Drysdale. So, we'll see what happens.
Prospect they got for
Cutter Gauthier. Yeah, we'll see what happens with this Anaheim team. I'm not rooting for them, but you know, some of their players are fantastic hockey talents. But will this team be able to get another question?
They also traded away a whale of a top four defense if they'd have kept any of them. Like Hampus Lindholm, Josh Manson, Shea Theodore, and oh heck, I always forgot the other guy's name.
The guy in Brandon Montour.
Yeah, that's the one.
Why did they do that?
Why did they do all of those things?
we had our reasons. Yeah, like why did all of them? Like what were you like? If you just had kept it, all started with not protecting Shea Theodore
in the draft,
and they had this plethora of really good young defensemen at that time. So that was the problem. But, man, that was a mistake.
Yeah, well, it's a pretty thin-looking plethora at this moment in time.
Bruce, this is our two good things, two bad things, two numbers in one conundrum podcast. What is your good thing?
Yeah, well, I got to go with the bearded Viking, Matthias Ekholm, who I thought had a fantastic game this afternoon. And he was just all over it in every way. Set up the game's first goal, got a secondary assist, scored the third goal himself on a blast from the point, set up the fifth goal with the primary assist, beautiful pass up the middle to Warren Fogle, where he convinced the entire Anaheim team and most of the fans and even observers watching on television, that he was going to be passing to the left wing to Drysdale. He looked like a quarterback, you know, and all of a sudden he's looking one way and the pass is right on Fogle's stick up the middle. That was just a beautiful play. But he just bossed the game in basically all aspects. And he has been tearing it up for a while. Riffing off of something that Jack Michael said in the first period, and I'll verify for sure in a minute, 20 points in his last 20 games. Yeah, defenseman who doesn't play on the power play except for fleeting minutes on the futile second unit.
He and Evan Bouchard are whipping around that puck on defense, Bruce, like they're the top defensive pairing on Moscow Red Army circa 1983. Like they are just moving that puck so well, and they have such incredible chemistry right now. They are a fantastic offensive defenseman.
Bouchard kept breaking up plays at the blue line before they could ever get over the blue line. And, you know, the puck would be on his stick, one quick look, bang, and it'd be going the other way again. It happened numerous times. And even, you know, when there was one that was a 2-on-1, it looked like he was in big trouble. And next thing you know, the puck's going north, and the Anaheim jailbreak is lost at sea because the puck's going the other way. And Bush is just... he's coming up with pucks. He's using his stick skills to collect those pucks, or strip guys, or, you know, pick up loose ones at the line. And then he sure does good things with it once he's got it. I thought he played as well as Ekholm a very, very strong game. Kind of understated. Like, he didn't overly boss it like I thought he did on Thursday, but a lot of very good things happened with Bush out there. And one bomb that rang the post. Anyway, that's Oilers' first pairing. It's just been brilliant.
Yeah, we got to look at Stetcher again this game on the second pairing. It's kind of hard to tell. I mean, I think he did okay. And Nurse had a good game, I thought. Anyway, my good thing, Bruce, is Connor McDavid, and he has temporarily, and it might have even changed since we started this podcast, taken over the scoring lead in the NHL. He's 1 point ahead of Kucherov at this point, and 1 point ahead of MacKinnon at this point. So that is fantastic. It has been a long slog. I think the Sportsnet graphic was something like in the mid-November, he was 85th, tied for 85th in NHL scoring, Connor McDavid. He had an injury. He missed a couple games, and he wasn't himself at the start of the year. And as much as anything, I think it was the cause of the Oilers' bad start. That and the fact that they had to play Jack Campbell to see if he was going to rebound from his bad season the season before. And Woodcroft had no choice but to put him in net for a number of games, and it just did not work out there at all. There was a lot of problems with that team, but McDavid's injury was a huge high on the
him
list.
And Ekholm.
And Ekholm. Both of those really high on the list. Ekholm wasn't himself. McDavid wasn't himself.
You could make a case, best forward, best defenseman.
Yeah, I think so. And but he has been himself. He is playing fantastic hockey. He's not scoring as much this year. But the two goals he scored tonight were mighty fine. That rush up the ice, he just made the kind of the slightest of inside moves on the defender, and then went around him to the outside. And it was just the sheer speed of what he's doing before beating the goalie. Then he makes a nice passing play, kind of a give and go and give and go kind of situation with Drysdale on the power play, moves into the slot and scores. And the interesting thing about McDavid is, you know, I think we have this idea that these players are straining as hard as they possibly can, and kind of at the edge of their capabilities, almost like, you know, like Tom Cruise in Top Gun 2, where he's about to pass out because he's at whatever warp power 10. But the truth is, it's I just think McDavid's in these situations, that's not the way it is at all for him. He is just so highly skilled that he's looking for net the whole time when he's moving in there. He's making his moves. He's practiced these moves so many times. They are like, the word effortless is not the right, like, not perfect, but that's the word we use. He's not straining to do these moves, to make these dekes. His skating is, that's how he skates. That is how that's how he's used to skating. He just does that. So when he's moving in on the goalie, he's thinking, okay, what am I going to do? Where am I going to put it? Where is it going to go this time? There, there. And then boom, it's in the net. And I just think that's the amazing thing about Connor McDavid at this point. It's just, he just does it. He just, without thinking, it looks magic, but it's just how he moves.
Yeah, well, that finish, when he's coming in left to right on a breakaway, which is not his preferred way, like when he's doing a shootout where he has his choice, he always comes in from the right boards. But on a breakaway where he's coming left to right, where he'll go across the face of the goal and then pull it back onto his forehand and upstairs, like he did today, that was exact same, very similar move that he scored on the famous Morgan Riley left in the dirt goal in Toronto in 2021. Same kind of deke, and he's scored a number of those over his careers. It's a very effective move to go back against his own grain and then lift it up into the top of the net. It's pretty, usually it's the goalie's blocker side, and it's pretty hard to get that big old blocker holding the paddle and react quickly enough to McDavid.
It looked like when I saw the play developing, I thought, there's nothing there. Like, it looked like the defenseman was in perfect position just to stop him, shut him down. If it was any other player, except for maybe McKinnon, that's exactly what would happen, or McCarr. And but with McDavid, no, he just was around the guy unexpectedly, and then, like, you know, really around him, right? You know, had a, not a clear breakaway, but a break in, and scored. So congratulations to McDavid. Hopefully he can, if he stays healthy, I think he will hold the lead in the scoring race. And you know, he's up against some players who can put up points though too. But I think he will win the scoring race on his way to, of course, winning the Hart Trophy again.
Depends how much they play him down the stretch, a little bit.
True.
And how the other guys, I mean, all of those guys, Kucherov and McKinnon and McDavid, they're all heading for the playoffs. So their coaches will probably try and dial them back a bit. But the Oilers having five games in the last week, that's going to be a much higher priority for Edmonton, to the point that they might even sit out players for one of those five games.
Do you think they would sit out McDavid, that he would ask to do that, or he wouldn't ask? Do you think they would do it? Like, I doubt he would, but I don't know. I mean, and I'm not against the idea of load management. Like, I think if they did it, I would think I'm good. I'm okay with that. I don't have a problem with that. I don't, and they're moving towards doing this in the NBA. They do it all the time in the NBA
load
now.
Management. Yeah.
Yeah. But do they do it in, baseball?
That's been baseball. I mean, that's been a thing for years. You know, they play 162 games, and there's lots of guys that'll play, you know, 150 of them, you know, and they'll get a day off every couple of weeks. You know,
there
might be a pinch hitter. It is a bit different.
It's a little different.
But hockey, it's not yet a thing. And I mean, I remember there was that time down in Tampa where this Leafs fan went down. It was the last game of the season, and they rested, I think it was Matthews, Marner, and Nylander. And this poor kid was down there with a sign saying, "I came to see Matthews, Marner, and Nylander. They're not playing." And he was crying, you know. And then they, next day, the Leafs had a public relations success when they invited this kid down under the stands to meet his heroes after the game, gave him sign sticks and stuff. And, you know, sort of turned, we'll call it chicken feathers into chicken salad. But, you know, that's, you have people, you know, maybe once in your life, someone gets, I want to see Connor McDavid play once in my life. And they go and they come a long distance and pay for hotels and tickets and everything. And that's the game that they decide to sit him out for load management. But in basketball, it's just flat out a thing. And you have to expect it now. But
yeah,
it's not well, quite you know there what? In hockey.
I think maybe that's what Vegas has been doing all these years with Mark Stone is load management. I mean, it is a load of something, but yeah. I'm not going to say what. Bruce, let's move on to our bad thing. What's your bad thing?
Oh, 2 points for McKinnon now, but it's 4-2 for
so he's tied. Nashville,
so he's tied again.
All right.
Anyway, my bad thing is a thing that happened very early in the first period. In fact, on his first shift of the game, when Brett Kulak was beamed by an outside shot, maybe it took a deflection. Shot by William Lagesson, former Oiler, who just went to Anaheim, and who, by sheer coincidence, was the guy that the Oilers traded to get Brett Kulak. And now he's the guy that shot his fiend Kulak and put him out of the game after one shift and 49 seconds of action. He does get credit for a block shot, which I guess he did with his bean. And everything else, you know, so the Oilers had to play with five D-men for the whole game. And we'll see if what's going on. But anytime someone takes a hit in the head and is forced to leave a game, you have the worry about possible concussion or, you know, bad cut broken or bone. Broken cheekbone or, you know, there's a few things.
Did you see where it hit, Bruce?
Looked like it hit him on the side of the head. Like not directly in the face, but somewhere up on the side of his melon. So
on his helmet, I couldn't tell if it was face?
I think it was under the helmet, but
okay.
It was kind of hard to tell, and they didn't really have the definitive angle on it, but serious enough that he left the game and did not return. So
yeah, you know,
that's
with
a bad thing.
That is a bad thing. And with the concussion protocols now, they don't take chances. Like if he comes to the bench and like if he has a headache, if his head hurts, I think that would be a signal. They'll just keep him out of the game for precautionary purposes, and we can hope that's what this is.
Right.
That wouldn't be unheard of at all. That would be proper practice, and we've seen that before, and it's the mm-hmm. right thing to do when you have a possible concussion. So we'll see. Of course, you know, they do. The Oilers have been remarkably injury free on defense for almost 2 years now. And if he is out for a while, Philip Roberg would then probably be the call up, you'd think.
Yes.
And they play a very similar game, Kulak and Broberg. They're very similar players in a lot of ways. Big guys who can really skate and sound positional defenders, not flashy on the attack. They move the puck. So it'll be interesting to see how Broberg would do given the situation and if he could replicate Kulak's game, which has been a good in his role. He's been a very good player for the Oilers, especially in the playoffs. He's been outstanding. So we'll see how that develops. My bad thing is Calvin Pickard losing his shutout, which is about as bad as you can get in a game like this. There wasn't much bad other than the injury. And even that goal against was a weird one. It was one of the rare goals, Bruce, and this probably happens only two or three times a year, maybe, or once a year or twice a year, where we both watch the goal and we don't really identify anyone who made an obvious mistake.
Right.
There wasn't really, like, you could... Maybe someone should have picked him up in the high slot, but usually they don't. Like usually you tie the stick up. If the player in front, the attacker in front of the net, if his stick isn't tied up, we usually consider that a mistake. But the guy in the high slot, if he tips it from out high, it's kind of, you know, do you usually tie up that guy's stick? No, in the NHL, it's not common practice because not many goals are scored that way. And this was a point shot tipped in from the high slot and...
It was a good goal by Anaheim.
It was a great play.
They They made a great sort of give and go passing in the slot to isolate the forwards. I think Ryan, you know, he was piggy in the middle, and then Nuge had to, and of course the Oilers generally line up their two forwards sort of vertically up the center of the zone, mm-hmm. sort of rotate over to the point, because usually on the power play there only is one point, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's only one point man in a modern power play, but not this one. And the shot came from outside, and Nuge couldn't quite get over there. But I didn't see anything he did wrong. It just was the way that they set up the play with a quick puck movement, and then they got a good hard outside shot and a perfect deflection in the slot. It was the only decent shot they had in the third, it seemed like, but
pretty much. Well. Pretty much. Yeah, they had one slot shot as well just before then. That's where Henrik got the penalty, actually, that led to that goal. He got his stick on the shooter, I think. Anyway, it's tough for Calvin Pickard to lose a shutout, but he'll take the – if he could have said, if you go into this game and you know you're going to give up one goal against, would you take mm-hmm. that? I think take that. So that's good for him to get back on track. He had a pretty high event game. The last game let in a lot of goals. It was good for the Oilers. They need Calvin Pickard to play. They're going to have to play him as much as possible.
Well, this was six out of the last 14, David, so they've been doing it.
It's really good. Yeah, they have.
And as the schedule's picked up, they've just been slotting them in more and more, and it's the right thing to do. And Skinner's playing his two games a week, you know, and if they play three games, Pickard gets one. If they play four games, he might get two. It's not like they're just heavily leaning on the one dude. It's and Pickard's, you know, with that one hiccup, I think he had 11 straight games with three goals against or fewer before that one 4-goal game in Ottawa, and then right back to a, you know, near shutout in his very next game. So he's been getting the job done, and, you know, they've been picking their spots. Like, I think this was the third different time that he's beaten Anaheim this year, and, you know, they put him in for those games for good reason, that the Oilers should win those games, right? And they do.
Interestingly, Bruce, the Oilers have now pulled 4 points behind the Vancouver Canucks with a game in hand. Mm-hmm. They're right there.
And a game left with the Canucks.
So you win that game, mm-hmm. and you're 2 points behind. And, yeah, the Oilers... And look at this, their goal differential, Canucks plus 57, Oilers plus 56. Okay. So this is getting interesting. I don't really know. Could they end up playing, who's going to have the most points, I guess, in this? Oh, probably Dallas. Looks like they got 101. So Dallas would play the eighth seed, which right now is Los Angeles. Yeah. And if you win the Pacific division, you'll play Nashville, which is one of the hottest teams in the NHL. Has been. And beating the Avs tonight, you're saying, today? So I don't know if there's any, I guess there's a huge advantage if you get to the second, when you get to the second round, I will say. If you get to the second round and the third round, you're more likely to get home ice advantage the higher up the standings you go. In terms of a first round, I mean, you might want to, would you rather play Vegas or Nashville in the first round? I'd rather the Oilers play Nashville, personally. But,
yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't think there's any sort of easy roads there. I think
there
there's eight strong
not.
Teams in the West.
There
rest.
Is not. Yeah, that's
and
true.
And you can scratch and claw and get first place in the division. And something can happen on the last day of the season that two teams switch spots and you wind up playing the team you were trying to avoid if you had anything to do with it. You know, like you can't just pick your opponent even if you control your own destiny, so to speak. But
yeah, I don't think the Oilers are going to be scratching and clawing and, you know, playing McDavid 28 minutes a game in order to get first place over the Canucks. If they do, they do. If they don't, they don't. And I think
they won't be playing them like that.
they're focused on four rounds, winning four rounds, and whoever they play, that's whoever it is. And four tough rounds of hockey, it's going to be for sure in the West. Bruce, what's your number?
Yeah, I'm going to go with number 18. I was going to go with Matthias Ekholm's fantastic numbers in this game, and I should have just mentioned them when I made him my good thing, because they were fantastic, plus five. The number 18, this is the number of consecutive goals scored by Zach Hyman since the last time he got an assist. And he was finally awarded with an assist in the first period today on what had originally been announced as an unassisted goal by McDavid, when McDavid checked the puck, stole the puck off a guy in the just inside the Oilers' blue line. And they must have determined that it bounced off of Hyman's stick or leg or something, and then McDavid picked it up and took it the remaining 140 feet, made the deposit. So not exactly a highlight reel assist, but this broke a streak of Hyman, in which in the last, against Boston back on February 21st, he had an assist, and then he had a goal that tied the game in the third period. That was the 6-5 loss here in Edmonton. And since then, just goals. But 17 goals in the last 18 games. So counting the Boston game, 18 goals in the last 18 and a bit games coming into today, and zero assists, 18 and zero.
That was so a hell of a goal today.
He was Elroy Face in 1960 in this little run.
Was that a Pittsburgh Pirates pitcher?
Pittsburgh Pirates relief pitcher that just was money for, yeah, just an incredibly hot year, the year the Pirates won the World Series. And the famous Bill Mazeroski homer in the World Series. Anyways, it was just an amazing run. And then, of course, he did finally pick up that kind of weak assist, and then he scored another goal. And it actually was a... an ethical goal scored from distance on a great three-way passing play, Bouchard to McDavid, and then to Hyman for the one-time burial. But I just find it remarkable in this day and age, or any day and age. I mean, maybe Joe Malone would do this, right? To score goals and, you know, like just... It's like they don't award assists. If you look at all the zeros and Hyman's thinking, what kind of player is this? Well, a very effective and successful player, I'll have you know. And over those 18 games, plus nine, six power play goals, and 11 at even strength, and, you know, just constantly productive. But all of the production has either been in the goal column or it's been in the uncredited column for screening goalies, winning puck battles, creating passing lanes, all those other things that he does, where he doesn't necessarily touch the puck, but he makes a positive impact on the game. And I don't think I've seen, like in years that I watch hockey, and I don't think they track it, so maybe it's been done, but it would be exceedingly rare for a guy to score 18 goals in a row between assists. 18 goals. It'd be a lot more common for a guy to get 18 assists in a row between goals, right? But
anyways. I really like that goal today, Bruce. Boy, did he ever hammer that shot into the net. Mm-hmm. But I have to say, I also enjoy the kind of the sleazy, drenched in deceit goals that he scores. It probably speaks poorly of me, but I really like those deceitful,
those unethical goals.
Unethical goals that he scores regularly. You know, those that you know that only the most privileged individuals in society are allowed to score. I understand, but I like both those things. You know, I'm okay with all of that with Zach Hyman. So I apologize to viewers who are offended by that comment, but it's just how I feel about it. So. You have to, you know, and it is 2024. We respect each other's feelings. So,
that's all right. That's kind of gone sideways on us,
Bruce.
Society.
Oh, God, that was such a great moment. Mm-hmm. that whole thing with that guy. Anyway, we won't get into it again. Bruce, my number, I was going to riff off your Ekholm thing and mm-hmm. provide an extra number. So I will give that.
Let's take the Ekholm numbers.
No, that's okay. Ekholm. So Bouchard is now for even strength points for defensemen. Bouchard's now tied for sixth. Mm-hmm. He's tied for fourth, with Hedman and Makar. He's got 42. Quinn Hughes leads the league with 50 even strength points. And Matthias Ekholm is 11th. He's got 35 even strength points this year. So he's having himself quite a season. And does Hronek play with Hughes in Vancouver?
Anytime I see him play, they're together.
Okay, they have a total.
That's been their strategy. If they put,
they have 85 points between them, and Bouchard and have 77. Ekholm, Bouchard are at 77. So the second highest even strength point scoring defenseman in the NHL. Oh, the Taves and Makar play together.
They do.
Maybe they do. Okay, and maybe it's third for instance because they have 79. So it's really close, and the Oilers have one of the best defensive pairings in the NHL, easily. There's only a few that are functioning like this. And when was the last time we had that? I guess that would be Pronger and who was his partner? Jason Smith in the playoffs?
Well, Jason Smith part of the time. It was Marc-Andre Bergeron during the season for a chunk of time. Yeah. With Spacek for a time, and where they had Stajos and Smith playing together, and Spacek with Pronger. Pronger could play with anybody.
That was more like a one dominant defenseman. I'd say the last time we had a pairing this dominant would be Huddy and Coffey.
No.
Was there a 1990 pairing? When they won a 90, they would have had
Lowell. I don't think there was any one pairing. I mean, Smith was their high scorer in that round of time. And he would be 50 points a year.
Yeah. No, so, and, yeah.
And so, yeah, Huddy and Coffey. And, I mean, Coffey was the big point getter. And, the gap between Coffey and Huddy for points was bigger than the one between Bouchard and Ekholm.
Yeah.
Which is... No, plenty big. I mean, but you got one guy on the power play and one isn't, and that makes a gigantic difference, of course. But Huddy was a wonderful player.
And he played the great power support. Play.
And he did play the power play. They had the traditional 2D-man power play back in those days. And he was pretty nifty there on the right point.
Indeed. Bruce, our conundrum. We're just going to riff a bit off the Oilers' signing of Olivier Rodrigue mm-hmm. to a new contract, 1-year contract. I guess the conundrum is what should the Oilers be doing with their goaltender situation this summer? And again, just like our discussion of Corey Perry the other day, this is highly dependent on what happens next with in the playoffs. Especially with Pickard, because how he plays in the playoffs is going to really impact whether or not they feel they need to replace him or stick with him for next year. Stu Skinner is going to be obviously a big part of the mix, no matter what. He's got, 2 years left on his contract that pays him?
Yes, he does.
About $2.75 million, something like that.
$2.6 million.
$2.6 million. So he's in the picture. Obviously, then there's Olivier Rodrigue, 23-year-old goalie. He's now had 4 seasons in the AHL. If he signed a new contract, but if he's sent down, he'll have to clear waivers. And then there's Jack Campbell, 3 years left on his $5 million deal a year. Jack Campbell now has the 6th highest save percentage in the AHL. Olivier Rodrigue is 11th. So, and this is a testament to both them and their team. They have a lot of really strong defensemen on that team. But Jack Campbell has been crushing it, Bruce, in the last 2 months in the AHL. And it is a conundrum about what's gonna happen with all. And they've just signed Connor Unger as well. But I think he'll be in the. Well, we'll see where he is next year. What do you think might happen?
I'll start with the last one first. Connor Unger in the ECHL next year, which is the exact Probably. Perfect place for him to go.
Yeah.
Get him somewhere. Like typically for any first-year pro goalie, the ESHL is a great option because it's a place where you know the guy's going to play games. Whereas you put him in the AHL and he's a backup to a veteran AHL goalie, you know, he might get 20 games. Whereas a guy in the ECHL, and the Oilers have been doing this since the time of I think right back to Devin Dubnyk, and practically every goalie that they brought along, Skinner and Rodrigue themselves, both had time in the ECHL. So that's the easy one. And the hard one is Jack Campbell, of course. And I despair sometimes at how folks have just completely given up on the guy, as if he somehow let down the side in such an egregious fashion that he cannot be redeemed ever, even though he's under contract for another 3 years. He was actually decent in the playoffs this year. He had a tough start, and you know what? About 23 members of the Edmonton Oilers all had tough starts. And the other 22 were all given the opportunity to redeem themselves in the NHL, and Campbell was sent out. And it took him a couple of weeks to sort of get his head back on straight. And since then, he's been really good. 929 outside of those first three games. 929, like that's elite. Now, you will say, or folks will say, yeah, but that's only AHL shooters. And all I can say is you can only stop the shooters you're facing. And if you're doing it better than the other competition, you know, you still got some game. But the question is there any way to make it fit and to make it work? Or do you just bite the bullet and buy the guy out because financially that's the best way to make cap space? Six-year buyout.
Yeah. 929 save percentage outside those first three games.
Yes.
For context, the best goal in the AHL, Clay Stevenson, has a 925 save percentage this year. So, I mean, you can't eliminate games from a goalie's record. But it does speak to how well he's played since getting his feet under him in the AHL. He was clearly discombobulated in Edmonton. Mm-hmm. His confidence was shredded. He went down there. It was still a bad scene for a while. And since then, he's been the best goalie in the AHL since he got his confidence, got his feet under.
Yeah, he was 8-19 after three games. And I mean, the Oilers, and Ken Holland has subsequently admitted that this was a mistake on his part to get Campbell back in the net and playing games to try and get his game going. And what he needed was what Toronto did with Ilya Samsonov, which is send him down and get him working with the goalie coach and not worrying about games while he was getting his stuff together. And Samsonov has since come back in the NHL and played well. And Campbell, you know, it looked like he was an absolute lost cause, you know, after he went down there and couldn't stop a beach ball at first. And you're thinking, this guy is just done. And just those three games, and then he had a little bit of a break, and they had a little bit more of a shared goaltending situation with Olivier Rodrigue. And since then, he's basically shone. I mean, 93% is so. But currently, he's missed the last handful of games. He got beaned by a puck, and so it's suspected concussion or some related thing. And word is they're hoping he'll be back early next week, but
okay,
you know how that goes. The hoping and actually happening are not always the same thing.
So the buyout, if they were to buy him out this summer, it would be 6 years at an average cap hit of $1.75 million, $1.1 million the first year cap hit for the Oilers. So that's the year they get
the most.
And that short-term thinking and short-term cap space is awfully attractive for teams to. They're very tempted by that. So after that, their cap hit is $2.3 million, then $2.6 million, And then
they're saving under the $5 million they would have.
No, that's what the cap hit is.
Oh, that's the cap hit. Okay.
It is the cap hit.
Right.
$1.1 million, $2.3 million, then $2.6 million, and then it goes to $1.5 million for the next three seasons. Yeah, it's a tough call, and I put a lot of stock though when I was played in the AHL this year, and you know, the other option, of course, is they could trade him and retain some salary, which might work out less to less than buying him out fully. So that's another possibility that that might happen.
That's what the Kings did with Cal Peterson, who was similarly overpaid goalie who didn't live up to his new contract expectations. Right away in his first year, they got the big contract and they sent him down to the minors. And they ultimately traded him to Philadelphia with a guy named Sean Walker as a sweetener just to move him away. And of course, Sean Walker has gone on to have a pretty good year in Philly and Colorado.
Well, the Oilers have a contract similar to that they might need to move this summer in Kulak. I hate to say it. Because I really like Kulak as a player, but the salary cap is what the salary cap is. So anyway, Cal Peterson is his name, the goalie.
Yeah.
He this year he played 5 games for the Flyers this year and had an 864 save percentage in the AHL. 24 games, he's got an 894 save percentage, Cal Peterson. So he's never bounced back.
Right.
He was much less of a solid prospect though of ever hope of turning out than is Campbell. I mean, he had essentially one good year, whereas Campbell strung together 5 or 6 solid pro seasons in a row. So yeah, we'll see what happens there, Bruce. I just keep thinking of that Brian Lawton comment that Lawton said he would never have signed Campbell because he never makes the same save twice the same way. There is that about him a little bit, but apparently he's been just cool as a cucumber and calm and efficient down in Bakersfield. So I'm cheering for him, and my preference would be that he gets another chance. And because next year, let's say they go with Skinner and Pickard, which seems the most likely turn of events at this point. I mean, you do have Rodrigue, so that's good if he clears waivers, which he's probably likely to. You never know about that. Actually, you don't know. It's more like a coin flip. But if someone gets injured, I mean, Jack Campbell's, there's a decent bet to have a solid NHL goalie. So rather than have to trade a lot, like look what they would have had given up this year. They're like the rumors, it was kind of outrageous to get a terrible goalie. Or a mediocre goalie, at least, at a big price. And that's something to keep in mind. Like, you might want to just keep that guy around. Might be the best plan.
Yeah, the problem is, of course, is that $5 million compared to the $775 NHL minimum that Rodrigue just signed for, or that Pickard is playing for.
Yeah.
You know. So you make that big salary go away, you can find a cheaper goalie who can be just as good or almost as good.
Yep.
So
you sure can.
That's the conundrum.
It is tempting. And you to make this decision, you will need to have, it'll be made in June, and it will be when the Oilers have a much better sense of who's coming back and who isn't, and what their cap needs are, and what for next season. And what that might mean. So you can't really make the call now, but it's just something to think about, because unexpectedly out of nowhere, seemingly Jack Campbell is playing really well. So that's excellent news.
Any thoughts of a Skinner Rodrigue combo?
Well, yeah, that's a possibility. I mean, if Rodrigue
were to wave beat the guy, Pickard, if he's looking good. You might have to just, I mean, 2 years ago, they had the same decision with Skinner that had played basically the maximum for a goalie, 4 years in the AHL. They give one extra year for the goalies to develop before they bring up, open them up to waivers. And Skinner basically needed 3.5 of the 4 years. And then the fifth year, they had no choice but to play him. And he was thought, well, that's a backup. We still need a starter. And that's when they went out to get Campbell. And turned out Skinner was the starter. But he's still going to be the starter and maybe a cheap young backup who's ready. And at what point do you say, well, Olivier Rodriguez has done everything we've asked him to do. He's ready.
Well, you don't say it, though, if they like Calvin Pickard, like, because they like their veterans on this team and they like a veteran backup goalie. Everyone likes that veteran backup goalie, and especially if he's playing well. So it's Calvin Pickard's job to lose the backup job, and he's winning it right now as we speak. So we'll see what happens the rest of the way. Bruce, the next they play next in Monday in St. Louis. All right. Well, we'll talk again then. Thanks for talking today.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.